Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 147. My name is John. He who makes a beast out of himself gets rid of the pain of being a man. This is a spoiler-filled commentary on The Batman, just out in theaters. This is your only warning. So you better stop now if you haven't seen the movie. Batman fails to solve Riddler's final clue, and the city gets flooded. See? I told you. Spoilers. Maybe next time you'll believe me. As usual, I will get what I didn't like out of the way first. Then something new, since this is now the fifth movie franchise and seventh overall cinematic live-action Batman, I'm going to compare and contrast some of the characters in this movie to their predecessors. Then anything else that I liked about it. And lastly, I'm going to expand on a couple of things from my appearance on the Blatcast last week. By the way, thanks again, Christian, for having me on. There was part of me that wanted to go off on a political rant on his show, but I didn't think that that was the appropriate time for me to go deep into my personal beliefs. Therefore, the ending to this podcast will get a little political. Normally, I would give you a warning so you could cut out, because, hey, even I'm getting sick of listening to and talking about politics. However, this time around, I recommend you tough it out and listen. First off, what I didn't like. This part isn't too involved. Most of the things were just a little irksome, and only one thing really made me pause and question it. The architecture at the Wayne residence. It looked like they stole their furniture from a Gothic cathedral, and I half expected strangers to walk in looking for a confessional. I didn't know if that was a set or a scattered location, but either way, the choice was horrible. Plus, what the hell happened to Wayne Manor? Why is Bruce living in a skyscraper? I mean, I know that happened in the Nolanverse, but there was a reason for that in that story. Similarly, that's not the Batcave we know. It's just an abandoned subway station. Why is it abandoned? I would think a major building like that would merit a working subway station, and that's a lot of room to completely abandon. Well, maybe the Gotham public transportation officials are not only corrupt, they're incompetent. This was supposed to show the detective side of Batman, but maybe he's still learning to hone his skills? Yes, he catches the blood on the floor before the police do at the mayor's murder scene. However, he seems to dismiss the cipher until Alfred starts trying to work it, and Batman realizes it's not about solving it, but finding the word hidden by highlighting the matching symbols from the greeting card. It seems Alfred and Gordon are doing a lot of the legwork, but Batman is just there for the first or the last step. Yeah. This Batman is still relatively new, only around for 2 years, but he certainly shows a lot of room for improvement. The only thing that really took me out of the movie was in the arena near the end, when Batman is knocked down and losing consciousness in his battle against Riddler's henchmen. What the hell did he inject himself with? I guess maybe it was supposed to be adrenaline, just to keep him from passing out, and then in between the rush and the rage, he almost loses it. That's a dangerous and suspicious move, and very un-Batman-like. He usually battles villains on performance-enhancing drugs, not take them himself. Was that Venom? It was green like Venom. Are the people who clutch their pearls over a Batman with a gun or a Batman saying he's going to fucking kill Joker gonna have any opinion about Batman on roids? That's all I have are the things that I didn't like. But there was something I disliked until I understood why they did it. Early on in the movie, I was taken aback by Bruce's indifference in keeping Wayne Enterprises running. I mean, you don't obtain and maintain all those wonderful toys unless you have an income stream to fund it all. It's stupid to not want to keep the company going. How does Alfred not explain this to him? However, if Bruce does care about the company, then he's going to be involved in the details and will find out the secret of what Falcone, the mayor, the commissioner, and others have done with the $1 billion renewal fund charity long before the Riddler goes off on his vendetta. Even if I don't like Bruce neglecting his family company, I know that if I can't accept that change, then I won't enjoy the rest of the movie. This is similar to what I call the Man of Steel conundrum. I was obsessing over a detail in the setup instead of letting it tie into the plot of the movie that led to a logical ending. Detractors for the Man of Steel bitch about what they consider an illogical ending because they missed the setup blatantly revealed to them. There's a key reason something happens, and you actually have to pay attention and follow the narrative instead of letting your assumptions of a character dictate your reaction. In Man of Steel, one small fact that is pointed out early and often in the movie, Clark Kent does not know how to fight. His dad always forbade and prevented him from retaliating when he was being picked on, because the consequences could be disastrous. So when he's faced with a squad of Kryptonian soldiers who not only do know how to fight, but adapt to their new powers much faster than Clark was able to do, Superman is quickly overwhelmed and fighting primarily just to stay alive. Additionally, these are not redeemable bad guys. They have no qualms about committing genocide in order to gain control of our world. So it makes sense that when the battle devastates the city, Clark doesn't know how to take down Zod quickly or have the experience to help people dying in the collapsing buildings. So when the lives of the family are at stake, Clark feels he has no other choice and kills Zod. My point is, pay fucking attention. And maybe you won't be a whiny little bitch about a hero acting in a way you don't like. Okay. I'm going to go through some of the characters that have appeared in previous movie universes. Now, let me just say up front, I'm trying to steer clear of the Batman 66 characters as much as possible. That's 60s camp. And comparisons to any of the modern interpretations is really unfair. First off, of course, Batman. This is a tough one, because like Bale and Keaton, Pattinson's Batman is early into his career. Affleck's Batman is much older, with a lot of anger and experience behind him. I don't know if I have a favorite Batman, but Affleck may be it, especially after the release of the Snyder Cut. I think Batfleck is a more efficient fighter than Pattinson's Batman, although his version is also excessively brutal on occasion. I think Bale is a stealthy Batman. Pattinson purposely lets his targets know he's coming, where Bale would pull them into the shadows and subdue them one by one in the chaos. On the Batman side of things, Pattinson is actually pretty damn strong. But so are Affleck, Keaton, and Bale. So he's not the best, but he at least holds his own against good company. No, I'm not going to talk about Kilmer or Clooney. Keaton is probably the best Bruce Wayne for me, really separating the personas better than anyone else. All the other actors let the brooding hero show way too much when they're out in public. Of course, Pattinson was definitely the worst offender of the bunch in that respect. There are a few times when he reacts to people exactly the same way he does as Batman. Not good. By the way, there's one shot in the movie showing a shirtless Pattinson from behind. Was I the only one who got the same grotesque vibe as how Joaquin Phoenix looked shirtless in The Joker? Maybe it's just me. Catwoman. Zoe Kravitz is the best Catwoman we've seen so far in the movies, and I'm not backing down from that. She is easily the most well-rounded and developed character. She brings an added pathos to the character that wasn't given to Hathaway. She has more chemistry with Batman than the others. I've already caught a little flack from coworkers who love Michelle Pfeiffer, but as wild as the performance was in Batman Returns, I don't like thinking of Selina Kyle as a wallflower who has a psychotic break, even though it's just fine in the Burton Schumacher movies, where the most sane villain turned out to be Mr. Freeze. Think about it. You know I'm right. But Catwoman is not generally portrayed as insane in the comics. I like Selina strong, smart, grounded, and determined to stand up to Batman and even stand against him if she needs to. Riddler. As easy as it was for me to pick a favorite Catwoman, this one had me convinced in about 30 seconds that he is by far the best cinematic Riddler we've seen, and it will be tough to ever match. That opening scene with Riddler silently waiting in the shadows to murder the mayor completely hooked me in. Again, I know there are some people who love Jim Carrey, and in Schumacher's kitschy neo-psychedelic movie, he fits right in. It's easy to think of Riddler as nothing more than Matthew Lesko on methamphetamines, and if that's all he is to you, then you probably love Carrey in Batman Forever, or even Frank Gorshin's campy take. Riddler in modern times has been a much more cerebral criminal, even figuring out Batman's true identity. I like that it really seemed he had it figured out in the movie. It's ironic that Batman missed the clue that would have prevented the city flooding, but Riddler doesn't realize how close he was to learning Batman's true identity. Maybe this Batman's below-average detective skills aren't bad as much as they are par for the course in this universe. Gordon. There's really only one other actor in this comparison, and that's Gary Oldman. Both put in excellent performances, and both had pivotal roles. The other Gordons took a much smaller role. Even J.K. Simmons, who I always want to include in any discussion. Wright's Gordon was much more involved and actively working side by side with Batman. All Oldman did in the first movie was drive the car. Oldman's Gordon partnered with Batman to try to take down the mob and fight the Joker, and later helped save the city from Bane, so I think he has the edge for the moment. But if Wright's Gordon continues this partnership with Batman in the sequel, he can far surpass Oldman. Penguin. Like Batman, it's pretty tough to compare the two iterations we've had in modern movies, because they are so vastly different. DeVito's Penguin was grotesque, really unlike any other version of the Penguin in the comics, cartoons, or TV shows. DeVito channeled every bit of cantankerous contempt he could into the character. He was unique. In fact, both of these movie portrayals are unlike anything people with only a passing knowledge of the character would expect. There was no classic comic book thievery that he was known for from his first appearance in 1941 all through the Adam West years and the various cartoons, and really had the same motivations and motif until the Nightfall saga, where he creates the facade of a legitimate businessman running a restaurant and casino. This modern interpretation is where Ferrell's Penguin gets his entire character, and he is absolutely amazing. It is so easy to completely forget who the actor is, and not just because of all the prosthetics and the change to his appearance. Ferrell immerses himself in the role, and I am so glad his story is going to continue in a limited series on HBO Max. As much as I want to give it to DeVito, I have to go with Colin Farrell as my favorite Penguin. Okay, let me get into what I liked. Easily, the best thing about this movie is not what was in it, but what was not. There is no Death of Thomas and Martha scene in the movie. Yes, it was talked about a lot, and that's fine, but we don't need to see it yet again. Now, I said this before, I'll say it again. We can skip any Death of the Wayne scene for at least a generation. How about a moratorium for the next 25 years? Nah, hell, let's just round that up to 2050. I'm good with that. There has been an unfortunate pattern in Batman solo movies to kill off at least one villain. Joker, Penguin, Two-Face, ironically twice, Ra's al Ghul, Bane, and Talia have all died in a Batman movie. Of course, no villain died in Batman and Robin, but the franchise did. All the main villains in this movie survived to potentially show up in sequels, and that's a damn good thing. The movie picked some great stories for inspiration. Catwoman's appearance and interaction with her roommate are nearly identical to Batman Year One. If you want a good introduction to the comic book version of Batman, I can think of no better story to read. The Long Halloween has now been used twice as inspiration for a Batman movie. The plotline of Batman, Gordon, and Harvey Dent teaming up to take down the mob was used, of course, in The Dark Knight. The Long Halloween has a couple of sequels, Dark Victory and Catwoman When in Rome. They also factor pretty heavily into the story, especially the reveal that Carmine Falcone is Catwoman's father. This is probably a good story to read after you've read Year One. It certainly holds the noir feel similar to the new movie. Both Year One and Long Halloween have animated adaptations on HBO Max. The Wayne's backstory, Alfred's characterization, and Batman's inability to stick the landing are very reminiscent of Batman Earth One. This is an alternate reality version that makes some key changes to the mythos that may confuse some new readers. So unless they're comfortable with the whole multiple Earths idea, I'd hold off on reading that, but I would still recommend it at some point. Matt Reeves reportedly decided to use the Zodiac Killer as inspiration for how the Riddler is portrayed in The Batman while reading Mindhunter, which is co-written by retired FBI agent John Douglas. I mentioned that because Mindhunter is my favorite nonfiction book of all time. It is as eye-opening as it is chilling. I was wondering why I was so enthralled by the Riddler in this movie, and to see he's based on a real serial killer gives so much weight to the character. By the way, Scott Glenn's character in Silence of the Lambs was based on John Douglas, and the Netflix series Mindhunter is based heavily on the book as well. In case you haven't guessed already, I highly recommend the book. But if you don't want to do that, you should definitely check out the Netflix series, which unfortunately seems to have been canceled despite reports that it was going to have a third season. This was a detective story first, even with the questionable skills of its title character. They made the story first and had Batman fit it instead of the other way around. This is especially true of a street-level superhero movie. The story needs to come first. It should feel like you can take away the costumes and the over-the-top explosions, and the story would still work. If it weren't the Batman, but rather a civilian police consultant, and it wasn't the Riddler, but rather, for lack of a better term, a standard serial killer, this would still be a damn good story. Now, what I don't care about. This is where we're going to get a little political. Quick aside, because I want you to understand where all the rest of this is coming from. This podcast exists only because I wanted a creative outlet to sort out my own personal beliefs. And I began it at a time when I was questioning everything I thought I knew. Podcast 100 will give you the full story. I'm pretty comfortable with my socio-political beliefs right now. That's not to say I refuse to listen to any other opinion, but unless I'm given compelling evidence to change, I will stand firm with what I currently believe. I can honestly say that I look for any excuse now to talk about something other than politics in this podcast. I've done a review of a movie or a TV show for about 5 of the last 6 months. Why? Think of it this way. The American political landscape is a giant canvas, and we citizens are all part of that canvas. And every politician is an artist. Unfortunately for us, their medium is feces. And all I've seen over the past 12 years is watch one politician after another shit all over us. And I see absolutely no reason to believe any new politician will do anything different. I will still give my opinion on matters when I'm compelled to do so, but I know it is too late to prevent the inevitable. That's why I don't really have a lot of interest in the things that are causing people to bitch on social media. First off, Catwoman's sexuality. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I am an out-of-the-closet bisexual male. However, I do not in any way support the LGBT and their tactics. I spent most of my early years, when I was in the closet and questioning my sexuality, listening to gay men tell me that my bisexuality was just a phase and that I would grow out of it when I found the right man. Rewind the podcast for about 10 seconds and listen to that last sentence again and let the irony sink in. Gay people would tell me that I was just going through a phase and that meeting the right person would take me out of that phase. Even now, I have gotten pushback from certain people in the LGBT community because my wife and I practice ethical non-monogamy. I guess they want us to be different, but only if we stay within the confines of their morality. So, you can understand when I say that the LGBT community does not speak for me, and I certainly don't want anyone to think I speak for them. I don't care if Catwoman is bisexual, any more than I care about any other previously straight character they have changed in their stories. Why the hell does it matter if Selena in this movie is or is not bisexual? She showed concern for a woman who lived with her and at one point in the movie calls her honey. It is at best ambiguous. Just like the whole thing with the Peacemaker that I really should have gotten to last podcast. Sorry. As part of a list of reasons why he should have killed him, White Dragon said Peacemaker had sex with men. And people went on social media to talk about the new bisexual Peacemaker. But if you listen to the whole thing, Peacemaker responds that the only thing his dad was right about is that Peacemaker was a piece of shit for listening to his dad for so long. There's no direct confirmation of the accusation of sleeping with men, so why is it such a big goddamn deal? Here's why. People these days are erroneously taught that you need to see someone else who looks like you and or loves like you before you can be inspired by them. The only white male DC character I can think of who was meant to be bisexual from his creation is John Constantine. So, according to the dogma, he's really the only one I should truly identify with. Everyone else, Catman, Jonathan Kent, have all had their sexuality retconned. You can't wait for the character to be similar to your appearance or sexuality until you're inspired. The heroism is the inspiration, not the skin color and not the sexuality. If you can't be inspired by the heroism of Batman because he's a rich white male, then it's not the wealth, skin color, or gender that's the problem. It's you. And then there's the all-white corruption. I'll be honest, I didn't notice it. It wasn't until Christian brought it up in the Bladcast that I even thought about it. That reaction I gave is exactly what I thought. I said it at that time and I'll say it again. I don't fucking care. And I don't. At no point in this movie did someone comment about all the corrupt white guys. And the political parties of the mayoral candidates can only be assumed. It was all done subtly. Last month, I did go off about the season finale of Peacemaker and its very thinly veiled political message. I also discussed politics in my review of Matrix Resurrections because they outright brought their opinions on what the original movie meant into a meta roundtable discussion during the movie. When the creators have such ham-fisted homilies, I think it's fair game to comment on them. When you tell your story and you don't hit people over the head with your political views while doing it, and they can just enjoy the story you're trying to tell, I don't want to get into it with you about your beliefs or motivations. I truly didn't notice the racial components of the corrupted Gotham officials. I was actually waiting for the reveal that the new mayor was also part of the corruption and that Falcone had both candidates in his pocket so he would win no matter what. So, for all you guys out there who are upset that all the corrupted officials were white, you need to understand that these people who write these stories are blind to the fact that the politicians they believe in are just as corrupt and will gladly sell them out to gain and retain power. Christian Blatt was right. If you look at the history of this nation, pretty much all the corruption was done by white males. And that's because white males have mostly been in power. I'm already comforted by the belief that these self-righteous people will learn corruption is not limited to one gender or race, and there's not a goddamn thing we can do to stop it. They're going to realize the people that they believe in are just as bad. So, get over the corruption portrayed in the Batman and quit whining. I don't care. You can't make me. I care about good stories and good characters. I don't mind political ideologies woven into the stories. If anything, at this point, I expect it. Some of these filmmakers just can't help themselves or even attempt to be neutral or understanding. I just don't want to be figuratively slapped in the face or talked down to because I dare to believe something different. This was a good story with good characters, and it kept its politics subtle. This movie took the best parts of the three previous franchises. The anger and fighting skills from the Snyderverse, the creepiness of the Burtonverse, and the intelligence and grittiness of the Nolanverse. Now, as we know from the 2004 Los Angeles Lakers, you can put a lot of best parts together and still not win a championship. That's not to say the Batman failed. It succeeded in creating a compelling narrative that leaves you wanting more. But I wouldn't put it above either Dark Knight or Batman Begins. It's probably a step above Batman 89 for me. You'll notice I'm picking all the movies with the scariest villains. Maybe that tells you a lot about me. If you want to see a very good Batman film, one that focuses on being a tense noir thriller, then you should definitely see it. I recommend doing so in the theaters, but if you want, you can wait a little over a month for it to be on HBO Max. It was well worth 3 hours of my time, and it should be worth it for you as well. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.